As an engineering leader, you know firsthand that achieving work-life balance can be hard. Many business owners struggle with the balance between their personal lives and their work. This leads to stress and a feeling of regret. But that's not the case for the listeners of the Engineer Your Success podcast with Dr. James Bryant. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you achieve success both in business and in life. Tune in. Let's engineer your success today. I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryant, your host for the show. This is the podcast where we dive deep into what it takes to design and live a life where you are winning at work and at home. It is my desire for you to have success both in business and in life, and I hope that you are having a great week. Today is a very special day. We're going to do an interview episode, and we haven't done an interview episode in a while. So today's episode is like a cozy coffee chat with friends who just happen to be giants in the pavement engineering and asset management world. I am thrilled to welcome Katie Zimmerman and David Peskin, two special guests from Applied Pavement Technology, also known as AP Tech, is a full-service pavement engineering firm that helps clients achieve their pavement engineering and asset management goals using comprehensive, innovative, and client-focused solutions. Here's a little bit more about our guests. Katie Zimmerman is the founding president of AP Tech and a trailblazer in the asset management field. Katie has earned an international reputation for her work using asset management programs for pavements, bridges, and ancillary assets to enhance transportation agency decisions. With her extensive experience in preparing asset management plans, implementing pavement management tools, and developing guidance documents, Katie has led several influential national research efforts that have and continue to shape the industry. We also have David Peskin, another one of AP Tech's founders. David is an accomplished pavement engineer with vast experience in pavement evaluation, design, and maintenance and rehabilitation techniques. His work in pavement evaluation and pavement preservation and preventative maintenance has made him a leading voice in the field, often sought out as a technical expert and a witness in complex pavement-related litigations. My first exposure to AP Tech was way back in 2001 while I was working for a private highway maintenance contractor. We hired AP Tech to help us build a payment management plan for one of our interstate maintenance projects. Later on in my career, while I was working for the Virginia Department of Transportation, I had the pleasure of having to go to a Transportation Research Board conference to give a presentation. And I can remember being drilled for the question and answer part of the presentation by none other than Katie Zimmerman, as she was asking me question after question about what we were doing in VDOT. Later on in my career, when it was time for me to think about getting more involved in an organization like the Transportation Research Board, this is before I was working for them as a volunteer, I actually received my first committee appointment to TRB's Asset Management Committee, and the chair of that committee was none other than Katie Zimmerman. So both Katie and David have provided invaluable advice to me during my career, and I wanted to find an opportunity for them to be able to share their collective wisdom with you. In this episode, we're going to talk about a wide range of topics, including the importance of creating a company culture that balances work satisfaction, profitability, and fun, the necessity of addressing business challenges such as cash flow and workload by implementing strategic financial decisions and hiring the right staff. We're going to talk about the value of considering and planning for retirement and exit strategies early in one's career, which really helped them in a thoughtful transition. We're going to talk about recognizing the right time to step back from leading roles to provide career growth opportunities for employees and identifying signs of decreased enthusiasm and looking at that as an indicator of change. And we're also going to talk about the evolving definition of success throughout one's career and the fulfillment found in pursuing passions outside of work, such as community service and building professional relationships. Stay tuned for this episode because it is filled with invaluable lessons and pioneering strategies from our two guests. Katie, David, I just want to take the opportunity to again Thank you for spending time with me. Thank you for everything that you have invested in my career, both when I was a volunteer and also when I was a staff member of the Transportation Research Board. I really appreciate all of the guidance, all of the suggestions, all of the great conversations, and I want to thank you again. And for you listening audience, get ready to rock and roll because you are going to enjoy this conversation. Thanks. For me, it is a great pleasure to have both Katie Zimmerman and David Peshkin here as guests on the Engineer Your Success podcast. We actually go way back to when I first started my career in engineering. I was working for a company called VMS. And I remember we were working with Angie Walters, I believe, from Applied Pavement Technology, and they were helping us to evaluate the pavement condition on Interstate 95 and other projects that we had in Virginia. And this was several years ago, and that was my first introduction to Applied Pavement Technology, and then subsequently Katie and David. So why don't you guys take some time introducing yourselves to the podcast audience?
I'll kick things off. I'm Katie Zimmerman. I'm a civil engineer, graduate of the University of Illinois with my bachelor's and master's degrees. I worked at the Corps of Engineers for a few years after I graduated, then went to work for another consulting company where I eventually became the president and left there to start Applied Pavement Technology and with David and Maggie Cobalt as partners in that company. And it's been a ride.
Hi, David Peshkin. I'm also a civil engineer, a graduate of University of Illinois. Prior to that, my background was a little bit different from a lot of engineers. I was originally a history major, and following my first graduation, I went into Peace Corps and lived overseas for 6 years. I came back, became an engineer, worked for another engineering company, and joined Katie and Maggie in starting the company. And I remember VMS, where you were working, was not our first client, but certainly one of the very early clients. And we were incredibly proud to have VMS as a client and be involved in that kind of work. It was because we were proud of all of our clients at that time, but that was a good project for us. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I remember just that was really my first introduction to kind of pavement condition assessment and using those tools to help you plan out what your maintenance strategy was going to be and what your work plans were going to be. And it fit within the other work that we were doing there in the field. So it really was a nice combination. All right, I really want to get into this interview. What was the vision or the problem that you wanted to solve when you started AP Tech?
I don't know that we always intended to start our own company. I don't think that was ever the vision, but David and I both worked at another company. Maggie worked there also. And I guess I would say that they were going in a different direction. And that prompted us to start thinking about whether there was something that we could do on our own. And I think we felt that we had learned enough lessons that we had a pretty good idea of how to make a company where people wanted to work, where they could do good work, and where we could have some fun at it. That was what I think we set out to do.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. It was really recognizing that there was an opportunity to create something that reflected what we valued rather than what somebody else valued and what we prioritized, and an opportunity to treat others as we wanted to be treated, to have a very colleague and client-oriented focus. It was something that we wanted to do and we thought others would appreciate as well.
So the problem that you were solving was creating an organization or a company where you could achieve those things, where you could be able to address your client needs, but also create an environment where you and your employees could flourish.
And have fun.
Yes.
Yeah, we and that fun is important, James, because we had as our triangle of emphases, do good work, make money, and have fun. And I think having fun, to make that stand up, we needed all three, but having fun did not take a back seat. We wanted work to be enjoyable.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard you guys express that, but I love it. And looking back on my exposure to both of you, I can see where you've lived life to have fun and you've worked and you've had fun. You know, I think that is awesome. And so as you guys were moving forward to develop the company, David, what were some of the challenges that you faced?
That's a great question, James. And answering it, I think about the challenges that we didn't worry about that maybe we should have. So number one, a very large percentage, and I don't have the number, of startup companies fail within the first year. And maybe we should have been more aware of that. The ability to earn a living would have been a concern. And maybe we weren't so worried about that either. And maybe we should have been. But I think one of the things that we were pretty confident about is that our varied skills among the three of us were going to be a good foundation for success. And that included both the technical background and the relationships. And we felt we had an understanding of what clients wanted to get from a consulting firm, and we felt we could deliver it. And maybe we should have thought longer and harder beyond that. But looking back, I think we can say it worked out.
No, Katie, I'll throw a similar question to you. What were some of the biggest or most unexpected challenges that you faced when you were starting and then growing the company?
I think there are at least, three things that pop into my mind immediately in terms of some of the challenges that we had to face. The first one was cash flow. We didn't have a lot of projects. How it is in the consulting world, you submit proposals, then they get selected, then you start doing the work, then the cash starts rolling in.
Yep.
But it took time, and we had staff and expenses that had to be paid and all of that. And all three of us were fortunate in that we were in a situation in our lives where we didn't have to have a lot of cash coming in order to survive. Some of us had spouses that made money. We weren't extravagant livers. It was just that period of time. So one of the things we did was we accrued, but we didn't pay ourselves half of our paychecks for a period of time.
Okay.
And we used that, those accrued dollars that we would have paid ourselves in salaries, we used that to help offset some of the expenses. So that took a period of time to get to the point where things were flowing the way they were supposed to flow. So that was, I think, one of the first challenges that I remember. I think the other one was we were trying to do it all. And that became an issue. For example, there was one time where a computer failed, and not knowing anything about computers, we ran out to Best Buy and bought another computer for probably way too much money.
Yeah.
We then also had staff who were being our IT people, and that kept them from doing their engineering work, and that we suffered from that. So I would say we were fairly proactive early in our life at Zaptech of hiring IT people to take care of those things so we could focus on the engineering and the things that we knew how to do. Another example of trying to do too much is I was the accountant in the company, and had set up our accounting system. And I remember one time being out of town with David, working with a client, and suddenly realizing payroll taxes were due that day, and scurrying around. This is back in the early 2000s, maybe, or even before that, that there weren't many options for what you do with paying payroll taxes. And yeah. So that became a priority. And it wasn't long after that we hired an administrative bookkeeper in the company. But the other thing I think that we had to manage was like just our growth. There were periods of time where we grew incredibly fast and finding enough people and getting them up to speed to handle all that stuff. So those are the kinds of things that I remember in the early days.
What were some of the things that you did to find the right people and retain the right people?
I think of our relationship with the University of Illinois, that we had very strong relationships with the civil engineering department, in particular the transportation department. And so we were able to get access to some students there that became employees. So that was a good resource for us in the early days.
Okay.
We also had a lot of really skilled coworkers where we used to work. And as we added work, we added projects that they might consider joining us to work on. I think what they saw was a fledgling company. Do I stick with what I know and I'm getting a paycheck and I'm doing the work I enjoy, or do I take the risk of leaving it all? And again, the challenges of a startup company and the chances of them not having long-term success and then not having options later on because I made that change. So a lot of our, even our current employees and our successors in the management of the company are people that we worked with 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Who elected to join us and have been with us all that time. So a combination of the Katie's perspective and our colleagues who ended up wanting to join us and have been quite successful.
See, now after listening to this earlier, all I think they wanted to leave what they were doing to come have fun.
There was one individual in particular who had just bought a new house and he was thinking about joining us for lesser pay. He had the risk of a brand new mortgage. And he's, is this really going to be okay for me? He's a little bit of a conservative guy. And I remember sending him an offer letter, but I also sent a joking offer letter about, you won't be able to pay your mortgage, you won't have enough money, but it'll be fun anyway, you should do this and all that. So he got a chuckle out of it. But these people took some sacrifices to join us, and usually for less pay than they were making.
Yeah. At the time. Even our third partner's accountant told her not to join us.
Oh, wow.
He said, it's not going to work out and you can't afford that. Let them go on.
We convinced her otherwise.
It must have been the pool of the fund. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But that does segue into the next question. And it plays a role into how we all reconnected again. The initial connection was when you guys were providing services for the company I was working for, VMS. But then the other connection was the interaction we had with national organizations. So here's the question. How did you leverage your network and partnerships with organizations like ASHTO and TRB to scale your company and to establish your reputation in the industry?
That's a good question. And one of the attributes of our company and our management, I think from the beginning, we put a high value on participation at the local and national level in organizations like TRB, like ASHTO, in doing projects for clients like E and FHWA at a national level. And so for a long time, we didn't say, that ASCE conference, it's too expensive to send somebody, or TRB, we really can't afford participation. Let's lay low and just do our project. So I think we never really had, we're going to spend X percent on this level of participation. But somehow I would say we had a very high level of participation in those activities, just because, in part because we recognize the value of the relationships and of the interactions that participation brings.
But I think also in terms of participation, we were very aggressive in terms of submitting abstracts and presentation ideas and things like that, so that we were often on the programs. And that was another strategy that we thought in the long term would introduce us to more people and hopefully would establish our reputation as people that are on the cutting edge, who know their stuff and could help verbalize some of those things. So I think that was a part of the involvement also, was using it as a marketing idea.
No, and I think you guys did a great job of doing that. I can remember at some of the initial transportation asset management conferences, or when we're talking about the topic, you guys were there front and center on the program, talking about the issues that you were helping your clients to address, but your presence was always there.
Yeah, we were very aggressive about that in terms of making that a priority in the company.
I've modeled what I do with this whole concept of winning at work and at home. And the way that I came across that, I would say the three questions that changed my life. And this was when I was going through a period where my youngest son was born. He came very early. He was, I think my wife was 26 weeks and a day when he actually was born. He was 1 pound, 14 ounces. And I can just remember, I'm still on my career trajectory. I'm working for the Transportation Research Board at the time, and I'm trying to grow and I'm doing all of this stuff. And quite frankly, I viewed it at that time initially as some kind of an inconvenience to my career, right? All of this stuff is happening. It's an inconvenience. No, I want to be real. No, I want to be real.
I know.
And I can just remember having a self-reflective moment and thinking through what I say are the three questions that changed my life. And it was, do you want to win at work? Yes, I do. Do you want to win at home? Absolutely, I want to win at home. But the third question that I had to ask myself was, am I winning at work and at home? And at that time, I could not answer that question yes, because I was so focused on growing my career that there were elements of things that were going on at home that were neglected. And so I had to, that was when I started to make the change in the shift that kind of represents the James Bryant that people see now, the philosophies that I talk about on the podcast and the philosophies that I've lived since that time in my life. So all of that kind of keys up this next question, which is, how did you guys manage work-life balance and cope with the stress and pressure of running and starting a company, particularly given the fact that there were those periods of aggressive growth?
I would say I handled it poorly. There's a responsibility that you carry on your shoulders, that you've got to keep these people employed. And so it wasn't so much that I was focusing on my career. It was more, I felt the responsibility for the people that had joined us.
Yeah.
And I would say that I was in a fairly good place for a period of time. My son was in college, last years of college, when we started the company. I was married at the time. That I am no longer married, so you'll figure out that I didn't necessarily handle the work-life balance well. That's a sign of it. But I think that because of the situation, I think I was able, once I was divorced, I had more time to be able to put into it. So I could spend weekends, I could spend evenings, I could do what needed to be done. And that helped me feel like I was carrying my part of the burden. I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to move out of the company also, though, is because there were a lot of vacations where mornings and nights I'm working on a proposal or I'm trying to get something done. And that is hard. It's hard to keep that up.
Yeah. One, I applaud you for the transition. It doesn't always happen because some people want to hold on forever and they define themselves by the role that they play. They define themselves by the weight that they carry. And so being able to say, I no longer want to carry this weight. I want to make a contribution, but I don't want to have to be the one carrying this weight. And that's okay. And I'm going to go and continue to enjoy other parts of life. I think that is very commendable, Katie.
Thank you.
And I agree with Katie. We didn't necessarily master that work-life balance in the beginning. And one of the things that we acknowledge is that when we started the company, the three of us had unique family situations. I was single at the time. I was able to devote a lot of energy to the company without distraction. And that's changed over time. I'm not single anymore, but I'm not working as hard as I did at one time in the past either. And to your point about the origins, there are a couple of things that I think of. We thought long and hard when we named the company. We early on decided we were not going to put our names in the company because we would like the company to live on past our participation. Mm-hmm. And it didn't need our names to do that. In fact, that would probably be a hindrance. But I also acknowledge that I saw a lot of people in the industry who acted as if the industry could not go on if they weren't a part of it. And I knew from the beginning, life will go on without me. I really want to be active and have meaningful participation while I'm doing that. But I also acknowledge that there will come a time when I will be able to walk away and it won't be the end of the world. I don't need to keep going to meetings when I'm 85 and have people snicker behind my back.
So Katie, he's not allowed to go to any meetings when he's 85. Okay.
Okay. All right. I hear it. But you know what? I don't have any authority over what he does. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew early on that there was an end. And another point, I don't know if this is the place to bring it up, but I think from the first year we formed, we had discussions every year about the end. And Katie made a point at our annual meetings of having each of us address our exit plan. How long do you think you're going to work? When are you going to go? Which, of course, got us to think about that, but also got us to think about a succession plan and to acknowledge from the start that we were not the end, that there was going to be life after Katie, David, and Maggie.
So Katie, where did you get the ideal for bringing that up early on? I think it's brilliant, but there are not many people. There are some seasoned business owners and clients that I have that do not think about that. And where you start asking them about the exit and they're thinking, like I said, some kind of a foreign language. What are you talking about? Everything is going fine. Is what do you want to do post company?
Yeah, I don't know, except that I was thinking I would retire early. And so maybe it was foremost in my mind that I was going to be done at 50 and something like that. So I think I was wondering whether that's even a possibility, I think is where it came from. So it was selfish, actually.
It seemed to be a great strategy for you and your partners to think about the what's next.
Go ahead. I was just going to say one thing that I think really did help with the work-life balance, and it's strange, but the partnership we had was a key part of that work-life balance. I wasn't carrying the burden by myself. I had partners that I could rely on. And when I was really fit to be tied or just couldn't stand it anymore, I had a partner that I could go to and say, I can't stand this anymore, and come back down. And I think having that partnership with people who are friends really made a difference, and not carrying the burden alone. And then I'd say the other thing is we learned to enjoy wine, and maybe that wasn't the best solution, but that didn't help.
You became connoisseurs.
Good enough.
No, I think that is great advice. You don't have to bear that burden alone, and that you have people that are in your life, a community of people that are in your life, whether they're partners or not, that can help support you in what you're trying to do. I think those are, to me, great nuggets to take from our discussion, is being able to surround yourself with those folks that can support you in your dreams and your endeavors and what you want to do. And if they are your friends and business partners, that's all the better.
Definitely.
And I think to your point, I agree that that may have been one of the most valuable things that we did, not knowing even, was to have that conversation on a regular basis. And sometimes it was uncomfortable. How long are you going to work? What's your plan? And it certainly didn't stay the same over the course of our 20 some years of doing this, but we know we're not going to be at this forever. And if you don't have that conversation, you're in denial. If you think the trajectory is always up, if you think you're always at the cutting edge of that trajectory and you're just going to ride off like that, it doesn't happen. And I think it's helpful for a company, again, in our case, almost from the beginning, to talk about the end and what we expect the end to look like. And there have been a number of iterations of that, but it enabled us, when we eventually made a transition, to get through that and to more thoughtfully plan for what that end for each of us looks like.
So one of the questions that brings up is, were there certain things that were going on or indications where you knew it was like, you know what? I think it's time for us to really make this transition. We've been talking about it over the years, which is great, but now let's start executing this to transition away from that day-to-day leadership.
We've always had great employees. And I think one of the things we learned from some of our interactions with management companies was you need to provide a career path and opportunities for your employees, or they're going to get to the point where they start looking elsewhere. Some company has a gap and really is recruiting them to fill that gap. We may have had that gap as well and just not acknowledged it. I think we came to the shared realization that we need to provide those opportunities for advancement within the company for all of our employees. And that means giving up some of the things we do, and especially some of the things that we like to do, and getting out of the way. You can't promote somebody, give up some of the things that you enjoy doing, and then come back and look over their shoulder and say, hey, you're doing it wrong, and I really know better.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it, is the realization we've got people who have been with us 20 years. They know more than we do. They've watched us. And to that point, in a little more detail, we've been approached, as many companies like us over the years, hey, are you interested in selling, or an opportunity to maybe cash in and get a little windfall? We went to our employees and asked them, do you want to work for someone else while we get rich with the sale of the company? Or do you want the opportunity to do this yourself? And I don't think they surprised us when they said, we'd like to try it ourselves.
Yeah.
I think personally, though, for me, one of the things that I was noticing was that I was losing my patience with some of the issues that would come up with employees and some of the enthusiasm for leading the company. And it didn't feel right to be responsible for leading the company when I'm losing my patience and my enthusiasm. It was a sign that it was a time for me personally to let go of those things.
What was the most challenging thing you guys face when navigating this exit, or your strategy, the transition strategy?
The transition strategy that we did evolved over a period of time, and it was a multi-year process in which we gave up some responsibilities while we still had ownership. Then we let go of ownership, and now we are all off of the board of directors and have no role at all like that. So it did take a little bit of time for that to happen and for everyone to figure out what their new roles are. That was definitely a challenge. I think for me, the kinds of challenges that I dealt with are figuring out my identity now. I spent so much time in the company and I could tell people about this company, and now I don't have a company. Who am I and what's my current role? And I think another one was just recognizing the company is going to be different. There are different people leading it. They have different priorities, different values, still very similar. It hasn't changed dramatically, but letting that be okay and letting things go And I think David has couched me a number of times or counseled me a number of times that, why are you emotionally vested in this? Let it go. And that helps. That's something I'm still working on, I'd say.
So who is Katie Zimmerman?
That's another podcast. We'll figure that out.
Okay. All right. What about you, David?
I agree with Katie. It's sometimes hard not to look over someone's shoulder, not to second guess. I would have done it this way. Why didn't they do it this way? You have to have trust in the people that you've been working with all this time. They had trust in us when we were leading the company, and we have to have trust in them now that they're leading the company. And again, maybe it's to speak to the work-life balance. There's a continuum. And when we started the company, work formed a significant percentage of that continuum, and life was a smaller percentage. And I see Katie nodding her head. At this point, I think life is a very large proportion of that continuum. And work is important, but it's not the only thing. And
what I would interject there, David, is that's true. And how we define success changes depending on where we're at in our careers or running our business and what's going on in our family life. And so there are absolutely times where you're right, work or business is going to take up a large percentage of your resources. That doesn't make it wrong. So even as a work-life balance person that talks about it, that doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it what you need to do in that season. So I applaud you both for continuing to transition through that phase to the phase that you're at now.
Thank you. It's when we were in our late 30s and early 40s, we didn't have grandchildren, for example. And that's everything. Many things are still important. Our relationships, our coworkers, our friendships, both in and out of work. Certainly our professional reputation as well as our personal reputation. But you get to a point where you put more emphasis on some of those than you did 30 years ago.
But I have noticed that I needed some place for me to use some of my leadership skills. I was hungry for that. And so I've been on a board for a Boys and Girls Club in town, and I accepted a role as the president of the board. And that has been a nice addition because it feeds that need to be able to use those skills. And so I think the timing on that has been perfect, so that I don't need to go to AppTech so much for that. I find it elsewhere.
No, I think that is great, Katie. And again, I applaud you both. Having known you guys for years in different capacities, I just appreciate the relationship. As always, I appreciate the advice. David, I appreciate the conversations we would have about the Tesla and the big green egg and all other kinds of things that we would talk about. And you guys have done great in our industry. And I just want to thank you for the contribution that you've made to the pavement management industry, to the transportation asset management industry, because it's been absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Thank you, James. And I think you highlight one of the things that we value, and that is if we sit down, if we go have lunch or dinner, we don't have to have 100% conversation about work.
Yes.
We can talk about kids. We can talk about cars. We can talk about the best way to smoke a brisket or ribs.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've always valued that part of our interactions and interactions with many professional colleagues more than anything.
Yeah, so do I. Hey guys, I know we're running up on our time. I appreciate you making time for this interview. So I am going to end this podcast like I end every episode of the Engineering Your Success podcast, and that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through, do it, and are living the life of their dreams. Katie and David, I want to thank you for being part of that select few and helping others to join that select few. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Engineer Your Success with Dr. James Bryant. Do me a favor and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it, and a small fraction of people actually do it. I believe that you can have success both in business and in life, and it's my passion to guide you on your path to engineering your success. Thanks.